Random House Audio presents Ransom by Danielle Steele. Read for you by Ron McClarty. Chapter 1. Peter Matthew Morgan stood at the counter, picking up his things, a wallet with $400 in it, from his cash account, the release papers he had to take with him and give his parole agent. He was wearing clothes the state had given him. He was wearing jeans, a white t-shirt with a denim shirt over it, running shoes and white socks. It was a far cry from what he had worn when he came in. He had been in Pelican Bay State Prison for 4 years and 3 months. He had served the minimum amount of time of his sentence, which was nonetheless a big hunk of time for a first offense. He had been caught with an extraordinary amount of cocaine, prosecuted by the state, convicted in a jury trial, and sentenced to state prison at Pelican Bay. At first, he had only sold to friends. Eventually, it not only supported the habit he had developed inadvertently, it supported all his financial needs, and at one time, his family's as well. He had made nearly $1 million in the 6 months before he'd been caught, but even that didn't fill the hole in the dam he'd created with the financial juggling he'd done. Drugs, bad investments, selling short, huge risks on commodities. He'd been a stockbroker for a while, and got in trouble with the SEC. Not enough to be prosecuted, in which case he would have been arrested by the feds and not the state. But he never was. He had been living so far beyond his means to such an insane degree, had so many potentially explosive balls in the air, and developed such a massive drug habit hanging out with the wrong people, that eventually the only way to negotiate his debt to his dealer had been to deal drugs for him. There had also been a small matter of bad checks and embezzlement, but he got lucky once again. His employer had decided not to press charges once he got arrested for dealing cocaine. What was the point? He didn't have the money anyway. Whatever he had taken, and it was in fact a relatively small amount in the scheme of things, and the money was long gone. There was no way he could recoup the funds. His employer at the time felt sorry for him. Peter had a way of charming people and making them fond of him. Peter Morgan was the epitome of a nice guy gone wrong. Somewhere along the way, he had opted for the low road too many times and blown every golden opportunity he'd ever had. More than Peter, his friends and business associates felt sorry for his wife and kids, who became the victims of his crazy schemes and rotten judgment. But everyone who knew him would have said that at the core, Peter Morgan was a nice guy. It was hard to say what had gone wrong. In truth, a lot had, for a long time. Peter's father died when he was 3, and had been the scion of an illustrious family from the cream of social circles in New York. The family fortune had been dwindling for years, and his mother managed to squander whatever his father left long before Peter grew up. Soon after his father died, she married another, very social, aristocratic young man. He was the heir of an important banking family who was devoted to Peter and his 2 siblings, educated and loved them, sent them to the best private schools, along with the 2 half-brothers who came into Peter's life during the course of their marriage. The family appeared wholesome and moneyed, certainly, although his mother's drinking increased steadily over time and wound her up in an institution eventually, leaving Peter and his 2 full siblings technically orphaned. His stepfather had never legally adopted them and remarried 1 year after Peter's mother died. His new wife saw no reason why her husband should be burdened, financially or otherwise, with 3 children who weren't his own. She was willing to take on the 2 children he had had by that marriage, although she wanted them sent away to boarding school. But she wanted nothing to do with the 3 children that had come into his previous marriage with Peter's mother. All Peter's stepfather was willing to do after that was pay for boarding school and then college and an inadequate allowance. But he explained, somewhat sheepishly, that he could no longer offer them haven in his home, nor additional funds. After that, Peter's vacations were spent at school or at the homes of friends whom he managed to charm into taking him home. And he was very charming. Once his mother died, Peter learned to live by his wits. It was all he had, and worked well for him. The only love and nurturing he got in those years were from friends' parents. There were often little incidents when he stayed with friends during school holidays. Money disappeared, tennis rackets vanished mysteriously and seemed to be missing when he left. Clothes were borrowed and never returned. Once a gold watch seemed to evaporate into thin air and a sobbing maid was fired as a result. As it so happened, it was later discovered, Peter had been sleeping with her. He was 16 at the time, and the proceeds from the watch that he had talked her into pilfering for him had kept him going for 6 months. His life was a constant struggle to come up with enough money to cover his needs, and he did whatever he had to do to meet those needs. He was so kind, polite, and pleasant to have around that he always appeared innocent when things went sour. It was impossible to believe that a boy like him could be guilty of any misdeed or crime. At one point, a school psychologist suggested that Peter had sociopathic tendencies, which even the headmaster found hard to believe. The psychologist had wisely surmised that under the veneer, he appeared to have less of a conscience than he should. And the veneer was incredibly appealing. It was hard to know who Peter really was beneath the surface. Above all, he was a survivor. He was a charming, bright, good-looking kid who had had a bunch of rotten breaks in his life. He had no one to rely on but himself, and deep at his core, he had been wounded. His parents' deaths, his stepfather's distancing himself from him and giving him almost no money. The two siblings he never saw once they were sent to different boarding schools on the East Coast had all taken a toll on him. And later, once in college, the news that his 18-year-old sister had drowned was yet another blow to a young soul already battered. He rarely talked about the experiences he'd had, or the sorrows that had resulted from them. And on the whole, he appeared to be a level-headed, optimistic, good-natured guy who could charm just about anyone. And often did. But life had been far from easy for him, although to look at him, you'd never know it. There was no visible evidence of the agonies he'd been through. The scars were far deeper and well hidden. Women fell into his hands like fruit off trees, and men found him good company. He drank a lot in college, friends remembered later on, but he never seemed out of control, and wasn't. Not obviously, at least. The wounds on Peter's soul were deep and hidden. Peter Morgan was all about control, and he always had a plan. His stepfather lived up to his promise and sent him to Duke, and from there he got a full scholarship to Harvard Business School and graduated with an MBA. He had all the tools he needed, along with a fine mind, good looks, and some valuable connections he'd made in the elite schools he had attended. It seemed an absolute certainty that he was someone who would go far. There was no question in anyone's mind that Peter Morgan would succeed. He was a genius with money, or so it seemed, and he had a multitude of plans. He got a job on Wall Street when he graduated, in a brokerage firm. And it was 2 years after he graduated that things started to go wrong. He broke some rules, churned some accounts, borrowed a little money. Things got dicey for him for a while, and then, as usual, he landed on his feet. He went to work for an investment banking firm and appeared to be the golden boy of Wall Street for a brief time. He had everything it took to make a success of his life, except a family and a conscience. Peter always had a scheme and a plan to get to the finish line faster. He had learned one thing from his childhood, that life could fall apart in an instant. And he had to take care of himself. There were few, if any, lucky breaks in life, and whatever luck there was, you made yourself. At 29, he married Janet, a dazzling debutante, who happened to be the daughter of the head of the firm where he worked, and within 2 years, they had two adorable little girls. It was the perfect life. He loved his wife and was crazy about his kids. It looked like a long stretch of smooth road ahead of him, finally. When for no reason anyone could fathom, things started to go wrong again. All he talked about was making a lot of money, and seemed obsessed with that idea, whatever it took. Some thought he was having too much fun. It was all too easy for him. He had fallen into a golden life, played too hard, got greedy, and inch by inch, he let life get out of control. In the end, his shortcuts and old habit of taking what he wanted did him in.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?